You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On Tuesday, a report on the health of trans and non-binary New Zealanders revealed some alarming statistics on the psychological distress, discrimination, and ongoing barriers to health services that they suffer. The report, titled Counting Ourselves, is a comprehensive study claiming to be the first of its kind in this country, including a survey of 1,178 trans and non-binary participants aged between 14 and 83. The report is stated to be a resource for helping bring about long overdue change, calling for various improvements to laws, policies, and training, as well as a provision of the clear pathways to gender-affirming healthcare. I spoke with Dr. Jamie Veal, the study's principal investigator and senior lecturer in psychology at the University of Waikato. I started off by asking Dr. Veal to give a brief summary of the report and its aims.
A good place to start is the name of the report, or the name of the project is called Counting Ourselves. So this really originated from the idea that trans and non-binary people, we as communities, weren't being counted in the data that we have in Aotearoa New Zealand when we started out doing this project, at least. In our health surveys, our social surveys, and even in our censuses, there aren't questions at the moment which accurately capture whether people are trans or non-binary. So we actually needed to set out and do this ourselves. We have a focus on health and well-being in this report, and we are also really interested in the things that are the social determinants of health as well. So things that are related to the health and well-being, including we looked at discrimination, violence, harassment, but also some of the positive protective factors that might possibly be a buffer, such as support from families and communities and other people, important people in our lives.
Can you give me some examples of the kinds of questions you asked the participants?
The kinds of questions that we asked, some of them were the same ones that were asked in the population-based surveys that I just mentioned before that aren't asking if people are trans or non-binary. So, for example, our New Zealand Health Survey or our General Social Survey. Then there are other ones that were specific to our healthcare. So, for example, around gender-affirming care, there's a lot of those questions which you wouldn't expect in one of these other surveys.
From these questions, what were the major findings? What kind of insights did the report reveal on trans and non-binary mental health?
So, unfortunately, we found really alarmingly high levels of psychological distress, suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts, and really high levels of discrimination and violence and significant barriers when trying to access health services, whether that's gender-affirming health services or other types of health services. So we had 1,178 trans or non-binary people aged from 14 to 83 participate in the survey. And so there was much higher levels of sexual violence than the general population. There were four times the rate of our participants who had reported that somebody had forced them to have sex with them against their will since they were age 13. So that was a third of our participants reported that. And for discrimination, we had two-thirds had ever reported that they'd ever been discriminated against, and 44% had in the last year, so which is double the rate of the general population. And this was especially in the areas of when they were trying to get work or housing, and also in public places. And I mentioned the psychological distress, so we asked this. We had a scale, which is the same questions that are asked in the New Zealand Health Survey, which asks about psychological distress, which is related to people's depression and anxiety. And around 8% of the general population have high or very high psychological distress. But what we found was our participants had nine times the rate of reporting that. So there was 72% of our participants. Also with suicide, we had more than 50% of our participants had seriously thought about suicide in the last year. More than a third, 37%, had ever attempted suicide, and 12% had attempted suicide in the last year.
Did the report delve into the whys? Did it talk about the causes of these really quite awful statistics?
Yeah, see, they're really quite awful statistics. And yes, yeah, so we were interested in social determinants of health. And we do know, we do have a word for, or a term for this in psychology. It's minority stress, which is the chronic stress that, I mean, we all face stresses in our lives, everybody, and the minority stress is the additional stress that people in marginalised groups, such as trans or non-binary people, face on top of that, and that's something that's chronic, so that's something that's ongoing that people face in just so many spheres of their daily life, that additional minority stress. And we found some really strong associations which are consistent with this minority stress. So, for example, we're I talked about sexual violence before. For those participants who had reported that somebody had had sex with them against their will since they were age 13, they were twice as likely to have reported that they'd attempted suicide in the last 12 months. So that was 18% versus 9%. And similarly as well, it was double the rate for those who'd experienced discrimination for being trans or non-binary. They were twice as likely to have reported that they'd attempted suicide in the last 12 months as well.
The study highlighted the struggle for trans and non-binary New Zealanders to access proper healthcare. Why is that? What support is lacking that you think should be there?
Sorry, was that question about gender-affirming care or general healthcare?
Gender-affirming care first off, and then general healthcare as well.
One of the main findings we had for gender-affirming care was that there was a large unmet need throughout the range of services that we asked about. So right through from things like that you may not always think about, like counselling support and hair removal for trans women and non-binary assigned male at birth people, through to things like surgeries as well. So we had, for the highest level of unmet need, so that was those who had not been able to access those services, even though these were things that they did need, there was more than two-thirds of our trans men had reported an unmet need for chest reconstruction surgeries, and the lowest rate, but it was still 1 in 5, 20% of our participants in total reported an unmet need for hormone therapy. So there are there's different barriers for these different types of care. For example, for the chest reconstruction surgery, most people said that the cost was going to be the most likely reason, or not being able to access it through the New Zealand health system. Whereas for hormones, other things like not knowing where to go to get these things were more common. So it differed for the different types of gender-affirming care. We also had half of our trans women had reported that they had an unmet need for voice therapy, and just under half, 49% of trans women had reported an unmet need for feminizing genital reconstruction surgery, that's vaginoplasty. And you also asked about general health care. We actually asked people about what those barriers were, and we had 1 in 5 participants reported in the last 12 months that they'd avoided seeing a doctor because they were worried about being disrespected or being mistreated as a trans or non-binary person. And there's a number, you can go to countingourselves.nz to download the full report. There's a whole lot of questions we asked about healthcare in a lot more depth, but I think that's just an example of what we see as the need for more support and education for our health professionals. While we do have some specialist services that are needed for some types of gender-affirming care, for example, trans and non-binary people are in all communities throughout Aotearoa. We had participants in all regions, and we all need health providers for all types of care. So I think this definitely speaks to a need for more education and helping to improve the competency of healthcare providers to be able to provide competent care that's accessible to our communities.
Now, I might be asking for a simplification of what's a wide range of issues here, but besides healthcare, what other improvements would you suggest for the well-being of trans and non-binary, such as laws, policies, pathways, etc.?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of recommendations that we have, mainly because we just asked about so many things in the questionnaire. We got feedback from a range of people who work in policy areas, as well as health professionals, community leaders, and our community advisory group. So we ended up with a really long, but I think really importantly detailed report. So we've got recommendations around protection for violence being prioritised and named in sexual and domestic violence work, training to improve safety and accessibility of these sexual and domestic violence services, also being named as a priority group in mental health and addiction priorities. I do note it's Mental Health Awareness Week this week, which we didn't time it that way at all, but it is quite fitting that these really stark numbers are coming out right now. I think, and there was the mental health inquiry that did have some mention of rainbow communities in it in a couple of places, which is something at least, but I think what we're seeing here is there's some serious high levels of mental health need, mental health inequities in our communities as well. And yeah, we've talked about discrimination and support in schools and support for families. And I think that, so, you know, changing policies and even changing legislation are all really important. And you can go to the report to look into more details about what we say about that. But the other key thread that I think is important to get across here is we've got almost a third of our participants report that they're feeling lonely most or all of the time. And, you know, trans and binary people, it's not going to, we can have all the policies in the world, but there's also needs to be that acceptance in our society as well for us, for that to change, for our lives to get better. So I think, you know, all of these people out there, if we could get rid of that loneliness, that would go a long way to addressing this, the serious concerns, serious mental health inequities that we have. So all of these trans and binary people, they're 30%, they're all somebody's child or parent or might be a workmate or somebody in your local community, somebody you play netball or rugby with, for example. So, yeah, we are all throughout our communities. There's over 1,000 of us that participated in our survey, and there's many more of us out in the community. So I think it's just about talking to us and listening to those of us who are leaders in our communities about what we need and just getting to know us. And I think if we start to move on from some of the old stereotypes about the ways that we are, and the more that we can have our voice and talk about our communities and the great things about us. We have over half of our participants report that they provide quite a lot of support for other trans and non-binary people, which is great. We have a great, strong sense of connection within our communities. But, you know, in some ways we are really struggling to actually be able to, a lot of us have lost people to suicide, as you can quite imagine from these statistics. So, yeah, we need help and support and people around us from all of our nearest and dearest out there in our community. So I think that's the other key thread, as well as the importance of the policy changes.
Thanks, Jamie. You've covered a wide range of really crucial things and very succinctly in a short amount of time. Thank you.
I really appreciate your interest. Yeah.
Of course.
Thank you. And we're likely to have, I'll just say quickly, this is our first release of our findings. We wanted to get it out there to our communities in an accessible way, and so that's important to us. And but we do have, and I should acknowledge, we've got funding from the Health Research Council and the Royal Foundation and the University of Waikato to be going for a bit longer as well. So we're going to be doing some more in-depth academic journal articles, but we're going to get those out in accessible ways to people as well. So I hope BFM might be interested in hearing more about some of the more in-depth analyses once we've got those coming out too.
We'll most likely report on it when all of that comes out. Given the local elections are currently happening, a Twitter thread came up in response to this research, highlighting that no one running for the Auckland DHB mentions LGBTQIA+ healthcare in their voting profiles. Twitter user Tiata decided to email all of those running, inquiring about their policies on the issue. And most of the candidates that responded stated that while they have no specific policies, they promote more inclusivity and better support. And finally, just at the end of the story, if you need to talk, free call or text 1737 anytime to speak to a trained counsellor for any reason. And if you need help, call Lifeline at 0800 543 354 or text HELP to 4357. And finally, victim support, call 0800 842 846.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.